What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 7 of the Way of the Warrior podcast. I'm going to be very upfront with you from the start. We might not hit the 45-minute mark this week, and it'll be down to the main topic of conversation today. We are going to talk about martial arts and depression. Now, not clinical, hardcore depression, because I have not had that, so can't speak from a point of view of experience of it, and I won't claim to. But mild, blue, down, low periods of life that I think anyone listening to this can relate to. And I'm going to talk about, it's going to be quite a personal episode, so I apologize for that. I try not to make it all about me and to talk about martial arts in general, but I'm going to talk from my experiences in terms of how I've used martial arts to cope with bad times, emotionally, spiritually. And I'm going to talk about overtraining and how sometimes the very thing you've used to help you can then become a hindrance. It can become the problem itself. I would like to start by outlining how I got into martial arts in the first place, because it's very relevant to what we're going to talk about today. I started martial arts training at around the age of 9 or 10. I'm not exactly sure when. And the reason my parents put me into martial arts, which at the time was karate, was I had started acting out at home. I was a very passive child. I was a very nice kid at school, very well behaved, leant on the introvert, quiet side of the spectrum of things. But my parents were going through a divorce, and it was quite a drawn out divorce. There was a lot of back and forth. And I wasn't conscious of this at the time, but through some therapy and some talking, I've realized that I noticed that I wasn't getting any attention, any love, because that was all going on between them and they were very distracted. Don't get me wrong, I was looked after. I was fed, I was clothed, I went to school, but the affection and the attention was not there because, you know, they had a lot going on. But what I realized was that I wasn't going to get attention for my usual behavior, my good behavior. But when I started doing bad things, when I started acting out, I started getting attention. Again, this wasn't like a conscious thing as a 10-year-old. I'm just looking back on it and realizing, you know, that that's what was going on here, because I started acting out. I started causing a bit of trouble at school. I started being a bit of a brat. I started breaking things. And it meant that they had to acknowledge me. They had to deal with me. They had to talk to me. So my parents put me into karate. A friend of my mother said, look, my son goes and my husband goes. Let them take him. Let him, he's obviously angry. He's obviously frustrated. Let him put it somewhere. Let him put it somewhere. So she said yes. To preface this, I'd done a lot of sport before this and never stuck with anything. So football, tennis, basketball, you know, Cub Scouts. My mum had tried everything under the sun to find me an activity to do after school. So she was quite reluctant because she knew she was going to have to put out some more money, a joining fee, uniform, training fees, and the chances were that I was going to quit in a couple of months. So I joined and instantly from day one fell in love with it. And instantly, according to my mother, my behavior corrected itself. I had somewhere to put my energy. I had somewhere to put my frustration and put my focus. And it was something that I really escaped into from that age all the way through my teenage years. It was the place I went to when anything got difficult. When school was hard, I just couldn't wait to go to training. When I got a bit older and I started having girlfriends and I'd argue or anything like that, I just wanted to go to training. It became like my church. It was the place I went to heal myself from the rest of the world and the other difficulties. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm talking from a real point of view of privilege in the sense that I had a great life. I had a very nice, comfortable childhood. And although my parents got divorced, I was always looked after. I was always loved. But this filled what I needed, which was an emotional gap doing something very much physical. Now, in my grown-up life, I've come to realize, you know, I've come to understand how much it helps for me personally and for others for managing your mental state of mind. And in particular, pulling me out of dark, deep, horrible places, which again, I'm not claiming to have cured depression with it. I'm not claiming that it works for everyone. But I know that for me, in my darkest hours, in my lowest points, it's been a literal and figurative lifesaver. It has done more for me than I believe I will ever be able to do for it in response. And I wanted to go over the reasons for that, as in why I think martial arts of any kind, by the way, if you've watched this channel by now, you know I don't really have a preference for styles. I love everything from grappling to striking, boxing, MMA, wrestling, BJJ, Muay Thai, you name it, I'm all for it. Here are some of the things that I think help. Number one is people. Martial arts is, although an individual sport in the sense that, you know, if you're going to compete in it, it's one-on-one. If you're thinking about a self-defense situation, more often than not, it's one-on-one. When you train, you can very much train either solo or one-on-one. So it's not, when you think about it the most, it's not a team sport like football, basketball, but it has this amazing family dynamic. You go into a gym, you join a gym, you're the new runt of the litter, basically. And someone might take you under their wing. They might, you know, they like you as a person, or they can see themselves in you when they'd started. So they start opening up to you, helping you, pushing you. And then you meet all these other personalities. And that was just a real, for me, it was just really interesting to watch. Because obviously you meet people in life all the time. And if you go to school, you go to work, you see the same people again and again, you get to observe them and realize the way they tick. But the thing was with, like, take for me, for example, as a kid, my school was quite a not a great school. It was a state school or public school, whatever you'd call it in your neck of the woods. And it wasn't a good one. It was just the local school. So everyone was quite similar at that school, at least at that age, you know. Everyone was a teenager or a young kid. And when I looked around and everyone was in uniform, it was a uniform school, everyone was the same. Different colored skins, different accents maybe, but everyone was the same. Awkward teenagers. And then I went to this martial arts school and there's adults there, there's younger kids there. I went to an all-boys school, there was girls there. There was a lot more variety in the type of people I got to interact with. And I got to meet a lot of people that I think otherwise, if it wasn't for coming here, we would never interact. And I've made a lot of friends who I think we would never in a million years have become friends if it wasn't for this activity bringing us together. So it introduces you to people outside of your normal sphere of interaction. And that's always a positive because that widens your spectrum and understanding of things. And one of the earliest points where I felt better about myself was actually one of the first lessons, and I met Rob. Rob still trains with me now as one of my students to this day. Rob was already training when I joined. And Rob has a whole bunch of different disabilities. So Rob has a lot of issues with coordination. Rob has a lot of issues physically with posture and balance. So martial arts for him is very difficult. He struggles with it to this day, but he comes every week. In fact, in the 20 plus years that I've been doing this, unless he's been seriously injured, as in he had a broken leg once where he fell off a bike, or due to COVID, I've never really known him to miss a class. He's always at training. And then you think, when you look at someone like Rob, and he's a very smiley person, he's such a happy guy, he's always just in a good mood. I've never seen him sad, never seen him down. And you just think, what have I got to complain about? I'm healthy, I've got full use of my functions. You know, my brain and body are in perfect working order in comparison to Rob. And then it just instantly, you're like humbled to think, well, if Rob can do it and Rob can smile, I can do it and I can smile. So I'm always grateful to Rob. And the people, my coaches, one of my coaches, I won't talk about names today, but one of my coaches, no matter what mood you were in, he was in the same mood. So when I'd come in a bit down, a bit quiet, he'd be like, "What's up, champ?" And he'd be all bubbly, energetic. And it was like almost impossible to stay in a bad mood around him because he was infectious with his personality. And he made a real effort as a coach to ensure that whatever, I'm sure he had things going on in his life, but whatever was going on in his life, I can say never made its way into the dojo. It never made its way into training. And by that, I was always exposed to this very positive role model and this way of being, not toxic positivity where you're just being positive for the sake of being positive, but just a very healthy, optimistic attitude to life and approach. The next thing that it does, other than expose you to all these wonderful people, and obviously it exposes you to some assholes, we've spoke about that before, but let's try and stay on the happy end of things for today. I need it anyway. The other thing is contact, as in actual physical contact. And I don't necessarily mean this in the intimate way, but in a kind of way I do. Like, there's something about being in contact with people that lets you know that you're not alone, that lets you know that there are other people that are the same. It's something that connects you back to what it is to be a person, what it is to be a human. And martial arts has an interesting way of doing this. Like in jiu-jitsu, it's very obvious because you are like on each other for the majority of training. But even in striking sports or anything with like where you clinch, or there is contact, there's body contact. And it was a weird thing. I remember being very young and having a sparring session, and you know, we'd have some good rounds. We're talking teenage years, young here. And then we'd finish, it'd be like the last round, I'd like collapse on the floor, and coach would just come and pat me on the back. And I was like, oh man, you know, that's nice. Like having coach acknowledge you like that and the pat on the back. And it was like, it was a good warm feeling. And again, it's not like I was starved of affection from my parents. My parents never hugged me or anything like that. It wasn't that. But it was, again, that you've got people outside of whatever's going on at home or whatever's going on with your girlfriend, or you've got this other group who are open to you, who are caring about you, who give a crap. And it's a nice thing. So there's something about the contact that definitely does it. The obvious ones are the exercise, the stretching, the breathing. Because when we talk about things like stress and depression, the general advice for people is to start with those things, is to exercise more, because exercise releases things like endorphins and feel-good hormones. And we know that exercise is associated with our brain health. And the more that we move our body, the more blood flow we get, the more oxygen flow we get, and the better that is for our mind. Breathing, if you exercise, guess what? You're going to breathe heavier. Martial arts with it has this added thing where meditation and stretching are attached. So, you know, most martial arts will have you stretch at the end of class. Some martial arts will do some breathing or meditation work at the end of class. So you don't need to go to something separate to do that. It's like an all-in-one package. And this is kind of what I'm getting down to with it, is in terms of helping you get out of a bad spot, martial arts, in 1 hour of going to a school, martial arts school, you can tick a lot of boxes for what a doctor might recommend. Talk to people, be around people more, yeah? Interact with people. Exercise more, breathe, do some breathing exercises, stretch, do some form of yoga, meditation. And then as a byproduct of that, you're going to drink more water. Now, the other thing that people always talk about, or I don't think they talk about it enough really, is how much your nutrition relates to your state of mind. And if you get into martial arts, you very quickly realize that if you optimize your nutrition, it's going to optimize your training, which is going to optimize your performance. So a lot of my increased care about what I ate and what I drank came from me wanting to perform better in my sport. It wasn't necessarily that I wanted to live a healthier life. Again, we're talking young guy. Let's go forward a few years. I'm in my early 20s. I'm in my competitive years. I wasn't drinking loads of water and eating my vegetables and watching my sugar intake for health reasons, because at 20, who cares? I certainly didn't. But I was doing it because I wanted to get on that scale at a certain weight, and I wanted to compete in a certain division, and I wanted to feel a certain way during training and during competition. So martial arts ticks a lot of these spaces. Now, one of the things that's always concerns me to this day, I guess, is what happens if I get too old to be able to do it the way I do it now? You know, like, you're going to get to a point where you're going to get too old to spar. Then you're going to get to a point where you're going to get too old to effectively do pad drills with another person. And then you're going to get to a point quite late, you know, towards the end, I guess, where you're going to even be too old to even hit a punch bag. Maybe you don't even want to at that point. But my concern has always been in my mind, because I rely on this so much, not only for my physical well-being, but for my mental well-being, is what would I do without it? What would I do if I got paralyzed tomorrow from like the neck down? I guess I'd just watch UFC like 24/7 or try to create a martial arts based around attacking with the head, you know, just biting and headbutts, and probably find a way to weaponize this huge nose of mine, put some use to it. But I worry about that sometimes. I do consider it, and I try to optimize my life now to ensure that I can do this for the long run. I don't train like I used to train in my 20s, because I know that that will beat up my body and I'll end up in a way where I can't train later on in life. I also don't allow myself to take large breaks. Like through COVID, I trained all the way through lockdown. Mostly because I knew if I managed to put on a proper belly or lose a high level of mobility or dexterity, that I'd really struggle to pull that back. And that if my body got into that state, I knew my mind would then suffer even further because of it. Here's the tricky part. So this is kind of where it meets in the middle, right? Overtraining. Let's discuss overtraining a bit, because the problem I run into all the time, less now, but very much in my earlier life, was martial arts had almost become like a crutch where I used training as a way of dealing with everything. So it meant I trained all the time, silly hours, like not a healthy approach to training. I overtrained a lot. Overtraining is a term that gets thrown around a lot these days, and I think a lot of people think they're overtraining, but they're under-resting or under-recovering. It's quite difficult to overtrain. To overtrain, I'd say you have to be doing between 3 and 4 hours every day with very little rest in between and without optimizing a lot of other things. So I'd run miles, I'd do tons of bag work, I'd spar everywhere I could, anywhere I could, with anyone I could spar with, which meant a lot of impact, a lot of headshots. And then what happens is, through trying to protect yourself from things like depression via training, you end up overtraining, which has symptoms including fatigue, poor recovery, and guess what? Depression. Feeling pretty down. When your body starts to feel really beaten up and your body feels like it can't recover, your mind starts responding to that. You start becoming quite depressed, quite lethargic, quite uninterested, unconcerned with the world. It has a profound impact on you. So, but the problem is, when you start feeling those feelings of sadness and depression, at least this was me, you train more, right? You're like, right, well, I'm feeling down, let's go for a run. And it becomes a vicious cycle. So it's really important to understand that what I'm not saying here is that by training martial arts or by doing any single activity, you're going to be able to cure whatever it is that's bothering you in your life. It's not true. You have to deal with the root causes. You have to get some therapy, talk to people, journal. You have to find a way of dealing with your demons, because training can help. It can suppress them. It can make them be quiet for a while. It can give you space, certainly. It can give you strength to fight them, certainly. But it's not necessarily the cure. And if you think it is and you train all the time, what you're really doing is you're now just covering those demons. And you can only do that for so long, because your body's going to fatigue and your mind is going to fatigue. And when that happens, you're going to run out of luck. Sooner or later, it's going to come, and it's going to come down hard. Let alone like what I said earlier about if it does come and you get injured, you get paralyzed, you get hurt seriously, you don't have that anymore. So you need other tools. You need other things to deal with it. I'm not going to go on about this stuff much longer, because I appreciate it can be a bit of a downer, if you're not a very depressed person. If you haven't dealt with this, you're kind of just thinking, wow, this is a bit of a sad episode. And if you are, then I think you're aware of most of this. But hopefully, if you are one of these people, at least you can sympathize and see that you are not alone. Do get help. Do talk to someone. Do speak to someone. And we will move on to a different topic for the rest of this episode. Let me give a little bit of further advice on something I spoke on a video the other day. I did a video where someone messaged me through Instagram, and this guy messaged me saying that he'd started sparring, and he was getting upset because he didn't like losing in sparring, and he started feeling a lot of pressure to train and win in sparring. And I did a video, so go watch that video. Stop trying to win in sparring, I believe is what I've called it. Stop trying to win during sparring. Most recent video, you'll see it. Go find it. And I spoke about this whole concept of you shouldn't be trying to win your sparring matches. You should be trying to learn in them. And part of that learning process is losing rounds and getting beaten up and then figuring out what was making you lose and making the necessary adjustments to ensure that that doesn't happen. For a portion of that video, I did touch on the idea of if you're getting ready to compete, the importance of winning some rounds, because that ability to win some rounds is what's going to build the confidence. And again, we come back to the mind here, where your mental strength is as important as all your physical preparation. You can be physically prepared, but if your mind isn't right, you're not going to be able to put into action what your body is capable of. Your mind will prevent you from doing so. So you need to have your mind right. And part of that is a confidence. There's no point going into camp and just getting wailed on and beaten up by people for 12 weeks straight, and then they put you in a fight and go, you got it, mate. Go win that fight. You're the champ. You're the best. You need to have that. So there's a part of it. So what I want to talk about today, so I don't basically recap a video that I've already done, is the three types of training partner that you need to have in order to improve. Number one, you need people that are not as good as you. Yeah, not as good. Significantly not as good, because you need to be able to get those wins. You need to be able to take what you've learnt, what you're working on, and effectively put it into practice against someone. You need to know that that combination that you've been doing on pads can translate onto a human being. Then you need people that are on your level, very similar in ability, where it's back and forth. Some days it's their day, some days it's your day. But when you both go for it, you're right there with each other. These are probably the most useful partners, because you elevate each other piece by piece, right? Let's say you're kickboxing. Your kicks get a little better, they got to deal with it, and then their punches get a little better, and then your defense gets a little better, and their cardio gets a little... You get to kind of build upon each other. And then you need people, and this is the one that people, when they get a bit better than beginners, they tend to avoid, and this is where the mistake happens. You need people that are a lot better than you. You need people that can beat you up. And now, as you get more experienced and you get really good, like to the real high echelons of it, you might not be able to easily find people that are a lot better than you, generally speaking. So you've got to start looking for specifics. You've got to find someone, again, let's talk about, I'm going to talk about kickboxing, but you translate this to your martial art as you please. You find someone who's a better kicker than you. Find someone who's a better boxer than you, who has better defense than you, who's more aggressive than you. Find someone who in one area of the sport has an advantage and let them have that advantage in the sense that work on removing that advantage from them without working on your strengths. Work on your weaknesses. Often in art, we do like open sparring sessions, and sometimes it means you might end up sparring with a kid or you might end up sparring with a beginner. And I always tell my advanced students or those more experienced, I say, don't just fight them how you'd normally fight everyone else, because then you don't get anything out of it because you're not trying anything, and they don't get anything out of it because you're going to whoop them. I said, instead, work on weaknesses. Work on something you know you wouldn't be able to land on me. Like, there's not in a million years you're not landing that technique on me because I'm just too switched on for it. Try and land it on them. And if you can land it on them, land it on the next best guy in the room. And if you can land it on them, land it on the next best guy in the room. And again, this goes back to those free training partners. Ones that aren't as good, ones that are as good, and ones that are better. And I see people, they're always missing one of the three, or they tend to, and they think that they don't need it. Most people think that they don't need people who are not as good as them because it doesn't elevate them to the next level. But like I said, it's good to have a safer place, safer in the sense that they're less able to be effective on you, where you can gain a confidence in certain techniques. And you build these levels up. So what ends up happening is someone who you say is not as good as you can still be really good. They're just not as good as you. Someone as good as you might be world champion level, and someone better than you might be world champion level, but they've just got a better one area. They're more specifically good at this thing rather than that thing, if that makes sense. But what I'm saying is vary up the training partners. Try to find different people. The biggest mistake I see people make when it comes to training partners is they train with the same person all the time. They find someone, one or two people that they're really comfortable with training, and they just work with them all the time. And I think you're doing a disservice to yourself by doing that, unless you're getting ready for someone or something very specific. I think the more variety you can get in terms of everything, but in particular in terms of training and sparring partners, the more looks you can see, different speeds, different powers, different focus levels, the better it's going to be for you in your overall improvement. So going back to what I was saying about the video I made, there are certain people that you do need to win against. But don't trick yourself by always beating people that are a lot better than you and letting that just feed an ego. I know quite a few black belts and advanced students, and I watch them, and they like to spar lower grades because it makes them feel good about themselves, especially as they get a bit older and they start to slow down a little bit. They want to still feel like they're on top. So they'll particularly partner with lesser able people because it doesn't require them to humble themselves to the fact that maybe they're slowing down or they're getting a bit older, because they can beat these guys just based off of knowledge, even if physically they might be a bit superior to them. I guess that, but this is what brings it back to that whole issue of trying to win in sparring and why that's just such a stupid idea, right? Because it's not competition. The beauty of competition is you are all aware of exactly what you're going into, and it's on a relatively even playing field in the sense that at competition, you've got the date. Everyone knows what date. You've got the time, roughly, depending on the tournament. You know when you're going to fight. You know what weight you're going to fight at, and you know how much time you've got to prepare. Now, what people do with that information how seriously they take the training prior, how seriously they take the weight cutting if it's a thing, or getting on the appropriate, you know, getting their body composition the right way to be on weight. That's all going to be up to them, but you get to decide that on the mat, in the ring, in the cage, on the day. In training, a lot of this isn't in place. One of you might have come from a long day of work. The other one might have had the day off. Okay? One of you might be eating before training because that's your time to eat. You don't have another chance. The other one might not. One of you might be hydrated. One of you might not. One of you might be a bit depressed. One of you might not. One of you might be a lot more experienced. And in tournaments, you wouldn't be in the same division. And one of you might not. So the whole idea of beating these guys in the training room is like, what are you feeding? Like, if you're feeding your ego, all right, cool, I guess. Good for you if that's what you need. But it's not, I don't think it's constructive. I don't think it's a constructive attitude to have. It also, what it ends up doing is you end up with these big gaps in the gym. You end up with people that are very good. And you've got a whole room of people that are just absolutely rubbish. Because no one elevates anyone else. Everyone's out for themselves. So the good guys just beat on the bad guys. And the bad guys just take the beatings until they quit and get replaced by other bad guys to take a fresh beating. I think if we want to elevate each other, we all need to be working together, which means sometimes I got to bring my level down to bring you up so that you can then be on my level. Yeah, sometimes you got to bring your level up. You got to come up and match me where I'm at because I'm coming at it with a certain intensity. So I will lift you up from the top. I will bring you up to me and you will be forced to come up to my level. But you can't do one of those all the time. You can't always be going down to bring people up. That's going to stifle your growth. And you can't always pull people up from that top position because that's going to burn that person out. It's too much. You need that variation in the room. The good, the very good, and the better than you in order to improve. Guys, like I said, I didn't see myself getting to the 45-minute mark today. The reason this all came up, and I'll be very honest with you all, is I'm not feeling great. I'm feeling down. And all things considered, I can't even pin it on anything I spoke about today, making this whole thing void. because I'm training. I'm not training at the intensity I think I need to, which is I think what's getting me down is I'm kind of just dipping my toe into training at the moment. And I think I'm getting frustrated with that. But it's time. I'm a busy man. I'm only going to get busier. As life goes on, we find that we just get busier. Like more comes in. So I'm not training how I would like to be. And that's bumming me out a little bit. But I'm feeling a little down. And I wanted to share that with you. I had it in my mind to wait until I was feeling better to record this episode. Because I didn't want to bring a negative energy to you guys. I didn't want to make an episode where you're like, wow, well, this is a depressing half an hour of my life. That wasn't my intention. But I also thought, well, I want to be honest and transparent about these things. And the internet and especially social media and things like YouTube, it's very choreographed and it's set up in a way that you always show the best of yourself. And I didn't want to be like that because I hate that about the online world. I hate that people only show the good and they never show that sometimes it's the bad. And at the moment, I'm not in a great place. Here's just a few things to think about. I'm not in a great place, but I continue to go to training. I'm not in a great place, but I continue to go to work. I continue to exercise and I continue to watch my nutrition and hydration. Because I know that if I allow those things to dip as well, if I allow myself to step that far off the wagon, that I'm going to spiral down to a very bad place and it's going to be that much harder to pull myself out of it. There are certain things that need to be non-negotiables. This is a really important thing in life in general, and I don't mean to turn this into a personal development podcast today. There are other places you can go to get this. But as a martial artist, as a fighter, as a coach, there are certain things that must be non-negotiables. And going to training, when you say you're going to training, needs to be non-negotiable. It's not down to my partner's sick. I need to stay home and look after them. My dog needs a walk. Like, you know what I mean. There are reasons where you can't come to training and then there are excuses so you can't come to training. Be very honest and very clear with yourself about when you'll have a reason not to train and when you have an excuse not to train. Today, everything in my being is telling me that I don't want to go to training, that I'm not in the mood, that I don't feel energetic enough, all this stuff. But I have made a commitment to myself to go to training today. I know I'm not overtrained because I don't do that anymore. I've got that under control. So I know that I can do this workout. I don't need to go and smash it today. I don't need to have the best workout. I don't need to train particularly hard, but I do need to show up. Because once you start breaking promises to yourself, then you can't trust yourself. And when you can't trust yourself, then you get into a real rough space in your mind. You have to kind of decide what kind of person you want to be. What kind of martial artist you want to be. I spoke on episode 1 about calling ourselves warrior martial arts. And everyone was like, you know, it's such an obvious, cheesy name. But I was like, all right, maybe it is. But for me, it's an archetype. For me, it's a reminder that if you want to call yourself a warrior, you've got to do what warriors do. You can't allow yourself to be a warrior when it suits and not a warrior when it doesn't. It's a state of being. It's part of who I am in my character. So regardless of what's going on, I'm going to training today. And I hope if you're feeling a bit down in the dumps and you're listening to this, I'm not lecturing you. I'm not moaning at you. Get the help you need. And in the meantime, get your butt out of the chair and go to training because it's going to help. It's going to keep you going. It's going to push you through. It's going to get you to the next day. Guys, thank you so much for watching and listening. Please let me know what you'd like me to talk about on the next episode. I apologize that it's not the normal full duration. I apologize it wasn't probably the most cheerful episode of the podcast I've ever done. I'm going to try to come in a better state of mind next week and have a few more topics to talk about. If you'd like me to talk on anything specific, drop it down in the comments below. Hit us up on Instagram via our DMs, warrior.martial.arts. And I will see you on the next one.